Good morning. Everyone awake and ready? I don't know about you, but the beds here sure beat the beds in a lot of places I've stayed, especially Mexico and the Philippines. But I really enjoyed the stay. It's a very nice facility. We enjoy the opportunity to meet you. We have tried, my wife and I, several times to make this gathering, and this is my this or that came up. Dwight invited us a couple times to go to the office and other ones, and it just seemed like something else was enough. But anyway, we're glad to be here, and glad to do a lot of friendships and meet a lot of new people. My name is Dwayne Conover. I live in Albuquerque here. I'm actually east in a small town called Moriarty, and Ed Anderson is here from Sierra Vista. I'm going to give a quick rundown upon the Philippines and a little bit of the way that we work the evangelistic work there, and a few pictures of the Philippine location. The purpose of the trip was to visit the congregations and have a better understanding of the need to know our brothers and sisters in the Philippines. Kind of give a brief history, Brother Harry Cobb and Brother Bill Yarbrough, from a tip of a serviceman from, that lives in Tucson, but he was stationed in the Subic Bay Naval Base there in the Philippines for a while. And upon that tip, Bill and Harry went and checked it out, and they heard there were some Church of Christ that were just like we were. And that was a little over 20 years ago, and since then, Harry and Bill made many trips. Edward made three, I've made a couple. I think Wayne Moore went, Luke Kurt, and I'm sure others that I'm missing. So the work there is not as old, perhaps, with Todd Minky and Kent Dixon in Africa and the efforts that's been put into Mexico, but it indeed has been going on for quite a while. And we've developed key people that we work with, local evangelists and families, over the years, and it's been a good experience. But still, it was only my second trip. We went last year and then this year in February, and it's just good to know who we're seeking to help and seeking to work with. Also, to verify the use of funds that have been sent over there over the last 5 years. There was a gap of about 4 years. Harry, I believe it was in 2010, somewhere in there. I think Harry, Ed went with him at that time, and then no one went for 4 years. It just didn't work out. And so when Ed and I went last year, we kind of wanted to verify if those funds had been used properly, and the buildings and land that was money was sent for, they had been purchased and they had been worked on. They kind of get them up and standing, and then they improve them a little bit, I guess is the best way to put it. But that way they do have some place to meet to better understand their needs, their ability to provide for themselves. I'm sure as different ones, Tony and Danny and others face in Africa, you always wonder how much money will ever be enough. And these people are poor, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. And there will never be enough money among the congregations in the U.S. to take care of all the needs. And in a way, I think we don't want to make them dependent on us. And that's a concern in Mexico, in the Philippines, that we help them, encourage them, edify them, and the main purpose is to spread the gospel. But of course, you have to have live people to do that, and sometimes their food situation and medical comes down to a life or death situation. To establish more direct contact for future distributions, this was one of the points that the brothers in out west were concerned, that we were having to send funds to one person and they distribute to a number of people on individual islands, so we want to try to establish a way to send more directly and not having what you might call heffies or key individuals, because unfortunately the human factor can be at work sometimes and there's a little bit of pride that may come up. To understand their standalone doctrine, and this was very important to us. I just want to preface that the Church of Christ has been over there since, what did they tell us, 1935, or for a long time. And, of course, it's various, the brand Church of Christ is there, but there's various digressions of it as far as Sunday school ministers, a lot of different things. And and one of the prime people over there is the Sunset Bible Institute out of Lubbock. And for better or worse, I'm indirectly have a in-law that is related there and goes to the Sunset. So I've had a lot of good discussions with one of the elders, in fact, a couple of the elders there. And they recognize that there are things they need to do better. And of course, we've discussed key issues and we still have differences. So we're not working with Sunset, but a lot of the brothers on certain islands were a product of that Sunset Bible Institute, which they still have a location there to teach and to encourage and instruct. This is a quick map of the Philippines. It's over 6,000 islands. They are not all inhabited, but we work on primarily four islands, actually five, and interested in making contacts in other parts of the island. The chain is approximately 900 miles long and about 400 miles wide. The key island that we work with, I'll see if I can point it out without shadowing too much. This is Luzon, and that's where Manila is. It's their largest island. We have congregations up in the north, in the central, and then down here along the coast where Subic Bay is, and Americans had their presence there, and there's a lot of American influence. Also on Mindoro, right here, there's about four or five congregations. This long island is called Palawan. It is influenced and has a degree of danger. We have not been there the last few years. Harry and Ed went there back in 2010. But it's one that we're advised to not go due to the radical Islam and the rebels in the mountains, etc. There are 12 churches over here on Palawan. Panay is one of our key locations in Negros. Those are medium to small islands. And we'll talk about the congregations there. And also, there's been some contact on Cebu there, which is somewhat of an Americanized island. They actually have a lot of industry and import into the U.S. So the large island that we showed, there's about 15 plus congregations. The small island below Luzon, 5, Palawan, 12 congregations, Panay, 4, and Negros, 8. There's approximately 40 plus churches there. And as of this last visit, I felt that we are in working agreement with most of those congregations. And there's more opportunities on Cebu and another place, island called Masbate. This is the first island, Luzon. As we pointed out, there was work up north, central, and then down around along the Poa area. And we're just going to show you a few quick slides. And then Mindoro is down at the very bottom. This is the primary congregation, Kalaman, there at Longapo that by Subic Bay that Harry and Bill originally met up with way back there when they first went over there. Sunset did have their little Bible Institute in a wing of the building here that has since gone away. That was kind of Harry and Bill's big thrust and very successful. And some of the older main people, one is right in the center, Fred Agamba. He is in the privileged chair now, and his wife, Emma, takes care of him. And then, you can't see it, but Rudy Gonzalez is a key person. His wife, very instrumental. They're in their 60s, 60 years old in the Philippines. They don't have a great diet, lots of rice, lots of starch, some diabetes. So, you know, it's they're kind of in their twilight years, but there's new talent being raised up, and that's what Ed and I are devoting a lot of our time as the coming generation of their teachers, preachers, and leaders. This is another one that has a key individual called Jody Carpo. He is kind of the keeper of the library over there, and that has the Brombeck and the Strong's and Concord's. Over here on the far left, you'll see the bookcase there. Very industrious person. He's about 32, 3 or 4, has a family, very nice family. This is also in the Longapo area. Do you remember how you pronounce that? Kalayanan? Kalayanan? Something like that. I'm still struggling with the pronunciations. This is the congregation mid-island in the large island around the Tarlac area, I think Oaxaca, or close to that. This house, the lower part on one side, is where we met. They are in the process of trying to get their building put up. We have sent funds for that, which is separate from this. You have to walk up a trail to get to this particular residence. It's agriculture. We were told we would start our meeting at 10 o'clock. It was a weekday, and we would be done by 12 by the leaders there. And the reason for it is the agricultural workers, which most of them are the husbands, they're out in the field working. They got permission to leave their job at 10, but they were told to be back at 12. And sure enough, we had 80 people in the assembly, and we went to serve. They got to eat first. Boom, they're gone, and then a third of our group was gone back to the fields. But again, they're very hard workers. This is a sampling of some of the younger evangelists and leaders there. Some of them are families, some of them are single people. There's usually, when we travel, there's 7 or 8 that make these rounds, and we'll spend a week or two on different islands just making all these congregations. They're up the hills, the mountains, and down by the sea, and they're all over. So you never know what you're going to run into. This is a rental van. We had a van on Luzon with Rudy Gonzalez, but it got caught in a flood and is no longer workable. Palawan is one of the islands we talked about. Here again, they have a radical Islam element there that doesn't make it safe. You'll notice on the right-hand side is a name of some of the key individuals, Fred Debisi and his daughter, Greeny. They actually serve as our communication for most of those congregations. There's 12 on Palawan, and then below the people, you'll see there are four or five of the key locations there. The Philippines is a tropical area. It's in the northern hemisphere, north of the equator, but it is considerably hotter. They get typhoons in the late fall and then in December, January. We like to go in February, miss the storms, but get there before summer. And so they, a lot of them, live up in the mountains. They live in remote villages, and they're hard to communicate with and hard to get to. But the Bisics there do a real good job. So what we did, we flew those people from Palawan, several of them, over to Manila. I met there at a meeting room in a hotel. This is Fred Bisic here. This is his daughter, Greeny. Of course, Ed and I and some of the other brothers, it was the safest way we could encourage him. We had about a day and a half seminar, Bible conference, if you will, and it went real well, and good reception. Next island is called Panay. It is the lower right-hand area is Iloilo. That's where Chris and Creamy live. This is Maha. This is their name on the far lower right. Keep pointing. Peter, I guess it doesn't help a lot. Some of the other evangelists, there's 4 congregations in that area. One of them is down in Colonog, and that's the next, one of the slides we're going to show. That's the building that Harry and Bill, again, helped pull the funds together. And I personally think a lot of the money was personal money from Bill and probably Harry and others. But they needed a good building. Buildings need to be masonry to withstand the all the typhoons and the termites and everything else. So this building is, and the Chris and Creamy live behind it. And over to the left here, on that side, you'll see a little tin areas. That's where their kitchen is, outdoor kitchen, and also their sons do some work as far as electronics, etc. This is one of the mountains up in, one of the churches up in the mountains. Chris and Creamy are over here. This is Chris, this is Creamy. And very energetic mid-age folks, probably late 40s, early 50s. And very instrumental in the work. They go over to the next island over called Negros. There's probably about 7 or 8 congregations there and some key individuals. All up and down the island, and again, you have to go up over the mountains. We're going to show some of the churches here that you do literally have to walk with, walk to the road ends. This is on the top of the mountain, but this has a road. This is Brother Montagna and his family, and they have a, theirs is a bamboo building, but it's well built and it has a sheet metal roof and serves a purpose. This is the church at Brother Clavio's. It's one of the first towns out of the main city of Baclod. And they're very instrumental. We did leave funds for them to add on. They've kind of outgrown their, building. Brother Ed may dwell on it, but they actually have a lot of songbooks sent over, I'm guessing, by the early churches from wherever, some in Bellevue, Washington, some in Arkansas, and some in Texas. I saw the script of the old red books, the sacred selections, and also hymns to the church. They learned the songs in English. I'm not sure they knew all the words of what they meant, but they were great singers. In fact, many of them have memorized, and when we ride around, they'll start singing without books and in the band, and that will go on for a long time. So they're wonderful people. This is the church. It's 3 miles up and down the mountain to get there. They send their young boys to carry the food whenever we have a meeting or they have a meeting. It's kind of a big day because that's a day they will have plenty to eat. And that's kind of heartbreaking to say, but I saw firsthand, was told firsthand by these folks that there's about 50 of them here, and half of them are kids. There's no power, there's no TV, no internet. They have a little black pipe that brings in a little bit of water. And they essentially have, the kids have a little banana. The banana's there about 4 or 5 inches long. That's breakfast. They have a little banana for lunch. And then if they're fortunate and their workers have been successful out there in the fields, they have some rice and maybe chicken broth or something for supper. We ask, well, why they eat for supper? It says it keeps their stomach full and they're able to get a good night's sleep. And then they get up the next morning and starts all over. We brought chicken, we brought some pita bread, we brought rice, vegetables up. And this little building is where we had the potluck, the common meal. And we decided we'd just kind of stand back. We were kind of warned this is very special. This is the meal of the month, if not the year. And they really enjoyed it. The kids ate a lot, and everyone ate a lot. But anyway, it was a great experience. They farm on the mountain, but there's about as many rocks as there is soil. So they use a little wooden plow. I wanted this one's pictured in, I wouldn't allow, with a piece of metal shank. And they put it behind their oxen or their caribou, and they plow the rocky soil, and they plant what they can. The corn, instead of being 4, 5, 6 foot tall, is more like this. Down in the valleys, they can get the tall corn and the big ears. But they make do with what they have. Some of them go down the mountain and work, but a lot of them just have bare essentials. This is another congregation off the mountain. Brother Gasper is there. This is one that was most recently financed, built by Service and by the folks back east here. But again, we just verified it's outstanding. It does need some improvements, and some money was left for that. This is another congregation that meets in the home, and there's about as many kids as there is women, a few men. The rest of the men are out in the fields working. So whenever you visit them during that weekday, you are going to miss some of the members there. The topics discussed were the Church of the Bible. We come back to the roots. We used Brombay and all his research about where infant baptism came in and all the different things that have diluted the assemblies. They were very interested in that. They like preaching about God's pattern for marriage. It is a little problem, but not a big problem. Technically, divorce is illegal in the Philippines, but what happens is they just leave their spouse and go move in with someone else. And so they wanted some principles taught there. The purpose of the assembly, there are some of them that really didn't know the purpose of the Lord's Supper for us, trying to have it every week. The roles and responsibilities of parents, the complete conversion process, hear, believe, confess, be baptized, and then also you fall through the significance of the resurrection, that we walk out of the water grave, Romans 6:4, to walk in newness of life. And so those are some of the topics we covered. We want to just give you one scripture here, and our biggest challenge, and I'm sure Harry, Bill, and others have faced this over the years, is what are needs and what are desires and wants. And this scripture kind of helps me focus. 1 Timothy 6:6, it says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." In other words, you keep buying stuff, even in America, but it won't really bring any happiness and contentment, because it's not done with godly principles. For we brought nothing into the world, we can take nothing out, but if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. And you know, I struggle with that. I've had the big boys' toys, the boats and airplanes and all this and that, but when you kind of get in the latter years of your life, you realize that that doesn't bring happiness, it doesn't bring joy. In fact, I love Sam Dick's description of happiness, that it's only a temporary relief from the treachery of life, from the events of life, and it will come and go. Whereas joy is something that is spiritually rooted, it's seated in the God and our hope of eternal salvation, and it's just a whole different situation. So it's the godliness, the relationship with God, that brings the contentment. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. If you read the Gospels, you know the apostles were there sent out, and disciples with bare necessities. They were taking one pair of sandals, take just the garments they had on, and then go to the city and find someone to stay with, and let them take care of your needs. And if they don't, well, then it's worse for them than Tyre and Sidon to shake the dust from your feet and move on. So people who want to get rich fall into temptation and are trapped into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge man into ruin and destruction. The one thing we asked them when we were leaving, some of the evangelists over there, well, there's some topics for next year. And they said, well, it wouldn't hurt to know a little bit about money management. This doesn't mean that they have money they throw away, but when they get maybe a dollar or two together, they'll run down and buy a little bag of rice, but they're paying a pretty big price for a small quantity, like we do at 7-Eleven here. The convenience is nice, but you're not going to get as much for your money. Whereas if they were able to put four or five families together, save their $20 to buy a 50-kilo bag of rice, well, then it would go a long way. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Some people who use money have wandered into the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. When I first went down to the old Mexico with Phil Yarbrough in 85, that they are very needy down there. They have dirt floors, shanty-type houses, nothing fancy at all, no masonry. And they just appreciated having the bare necessities. But we found that we helped them build a building, and then all of a sudden things change, and they want to have a big discussion. Who's the happy? Who gets the keys to the building? And it just kind of starts this snowball. I won't call it the love of these possessions, but it did spring up and create problems. In fact, over a period of 10, 15 years, the faithful group that was moving there, meeting there in the building in Guaymas, Old Mexico, no longer had a building. And it's in the more liberal hands right now. Ed and I have visited there lately, but I don't know that we have a lot of hope of encouraging them to get rid of some of their practices. But you, men of God, flee from all this, pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, and fairness, and gentleness. I take this verse and I apply it to us. And I guess my point being here, that out west, and especially as I've grown up, you know, different congregations, they have $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 in their treasury. And we'd have requests. It wasn't missionary requests. It was usually people needing food or needing the house payment or whatever from the local folks. And they just sat there with a lot of money and they're crazy. And I don't know what the situation is. I don't want to really try to analyze it, but their congregation is sitting around with $25,000, $50,000, $75,000 in their church treasuries. And I really wonder if that's the way the Lord would want us to use his money. Now, fortunately, or I won't say unfortunately, we had Bill Yarko in our congregation, and Ed and I are pretty much mentored by him. And his theory is if we have more than $1,000 or $2,000 in the treasury, we have too much. That's God's money. It needs to be out serving God's people. And so we kept a pretty low balance. If we ever hit $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000, we thought that was remarkable. We tried to keep maybe $5,000 in case a local family or a economic disaster hit or whatever. But again, I think we need to, whether it's personally, whether it's the Philippine people, we need to use our funds and resources and money wisely. From the church funds that are contributed for that Filipino work, there are church-related requests that we get that we like to help them. And many times we end up funding the bulk share of it. There's a little rent being paid in some places. There's repairs from the typhoons and roofs that get ripped off. We're using sheet metal as the roof of choice. Expansion, because these congregations do grow, they are very successful. And they're versed in their evangelistic work. We appreciate that. They do home studies. They have home churches. They have studies in the schools. Some of these folks are school teachers, and they don't have all the regulations we have here. And one of them has a study with the teachers in the teacher's lounge every Friday. And another one, they have to have their curriculum approved, if it is curriculum, but it's usually just reading out of the Bible. Once or twice a week in study hall, they'll have a little Bible study at that time with the kids in the school. So they aren't as polluted and diluted with all the materialism, perhaps, that we have in our society. So they're able to perhaps focus in a little more on meaningful things. Personal needs, food, medical, funerals, and then, of course, we use support. Roughly 20 evangelists over there that are actively working. Most of this is for fares and transportation, and we'll talk more about it in a minute there. The evangelist traveling expenses, we're encouraging more. It's like Chris and Creamy just got back from going on a evangelistic encouragement and teaching and preaching trip. From their island, Panay, to Negros, and we're trying to also get some of the locals over to Palawan. Since they're Filipino, their chance of them being captured or kidnapped is much less than Americans. Sources of income, we have furniture makers, mechanics, electronics, IT, folks, welders, office retail drivers. Agriculture, I have in big print, because we'll talk a little more in a minute. One engineer, we found several teachers, and some of them work for the government. And in farming and agriculture, they do rice, sugar cane, papaya, mangoes, pineapples, different fruits. Some of them have gardens. Now, we need to explain that, yes, they're in a tropical island, tropical zone, but they're dependent, like Africa, on the rain. And if it doesn't rain, the crops die. There is no crops. There is no food. We get a letter or email, or we need some bags of rice and corn, and very similar to Africa. But some of them do have a little bit of land. They probably inherited it from their folks or other relatives, so they do have some gardens, and that's some of the things they raise in it. There is tobacco raised there. I don't know if any of our folks are, but that's kind of their business, the corn. And a big industry is firewood. They chop wood up in the mountains, or they partially burn it and make charcoal bags and take it down to the city. So what is the evaluation of the assessment? Well, the assessment is many brothers have work, but many don't. There's just not the opportunity. And the problem is the bulk majority of the jobs, including the brothers and sisters, their income is likely to be $3, $4, $5, $6 a day. Now, food is a little less there, maybe 30% less. Medical is a little less, but not much. Prescriptions are a little less, but not much. So if you're bringing home $5, $10 a day, you're lucky to put food on the table and maybe pay, buy some medicine and continue to pay the electricity. And a lot of them don't have electricity, and some of them don't have running water. Some of the better paying jobs, the welders, the teachers, government workers, they may make up to $40, but that's kind of the exception to the rule. Incomes, use, food, transportation, basic needs. The government school is free, but there are many little fees, kind of like we're seeing popping up in our U.S. schools. Few of them have medical insurance. There is national medical insurance, but it is extra. You have to pay for it. If you don't have it, you have no medical insurance. None of them have storm insurance. Typhoon hits, they're in trouble. Medications have very little coverage. We encourage evangelists to find work. And that was a discussion I had with one of the elders there at Sunset in Lubbock. I said, you know, we just really don't like the support of preachers. So, you know, we help some of the evangelists. And he said, you know, we're getting to the point that we're tired of paying preachers too. They need to take care of themselves or the local congregation. So I was kind of glad that some things have worked themselves out the liberal church crisis, there are many locations, not just Africa. Actually, they have a work in Malawi. They have a work in Mexico, many works in Mexico. But we're just telling these folks, we cannot support you. You need to find work to supplement. We're glad to help with the fairs. We're glad to help. There's two or three, four key individuals that do spend full time teaching and preaching and helping and encouraging. But the most of them, we only give $1 to $3 a day, and that's mainly for transportation. Some of them may get used for food, different things. But there are four key individuals that they receive about $8 to $9 a day. That's not a lot. But they do have to pay their transportation and their utilities out of that. And work. Some of them have part-time work in addition to the support. This is just a sample of this last trip. We like to be transparent. We want to let people know where's this money going. And this last trip was about $14,000 for 3 weeks. The transportation, that is not the cost of the flight tickets over to between here and the Philippines. Those are less than $1,000. What happens once you get there, you have to fly back and forth to different islands or take ferries. And then you generally are going to have anywhere from 3 to 4, maybe up to 7 or 8 or 9 of the local brothers with you. So we've got to move them with us, whether we rent a van or all take the ferry or fly or whatever. And you also have to buy the meals and the accommodations, the second two items there. Now, the common meals are what we buy and take up and more or less have a potluck with the congregation. We try to make a congregation per day for most days, even during the week. And some, like I explained to you, some of these folks, this is the best meal they've had all month. And it's not much. Maybe a chicken chopped into a whole bunch of bony pieces, mixed in with some vegetables and rice and broth and stirred up, and that's the best meal they've had that month. And it's tasty, it's somewhat nourishing, but of course it's heavy in the starches and the carbohydrates. Medicine, you can see we put out a fair amount for that, and medical bills. Food that we actually left there in bulk as far as rice and corn. Buildings and chairs, there were some repairs and et cetera, the books and the Bibles, and then the evangelistic support. So here's a rough breakdown. And to get on a better, bigger picture on a yearly basis, and I think it's good we share this information because a lot of these funds come from you brothers back east here. Of course, for years it was channeled through Broad Street Church Christ or Harry there, and now I understand. I think Donald and Julie, y'all are kind of taking the checks that still come in and getting deposited. Is that kind of what I understand there? And Tony Whitten is kind of slipped into the saddle back here, and Edward and I are attempting to slip in the saddle as far as Philippines and Mexico. So it's been a passing of what I call the torch to the next generation. And it's good for the young ones here because your turn is coming. Edward and I and Tony will age out one day, even Donald might get a little older. We may have to pass the torch to the next generation. So that's the support. It's $2,600 a month. And I explained that what that went to, prior, a lot of it's transportation and just very basic food. Not a lot of fluff there. No one is getting rich. If you divide that by 20, you don't get a lot per person. Okay? We get very little. 20 evangelists. We get additional requests, and most of this comes to Edward and I through the email and other means, of about $2,500 to $3,500 a month. And that is what we're really struggling with. Brother Bill and Brother Harry had very mystical, mysterious sources that money seemed to pop up. And a year and a half ago, about a year before Harry passed away, Edward and I flew back, spent 3 or 4 days, and just tried to really soak in everything that we need to know about the Philippines before we went that next month. And it was a good thing. And I think Harry saw his time was coming because I think he was trying to. He says, I'm getting too busy, I'm getting too old, I need somebody to take the Mexico and the Philippines. So we kind of raised our hand a little bit, but Harry enveloped it, and indeed spent a lot of quality time with us. So we're having that burden on us now, and I guess I employ all the congregations, whether in the east or the north, midwest, or back west. We have made presentations. It's a lot lengthier than this, with many slides of the life in the Philippines, and if anyone wants a benefit of that, let me know. I've got an email at the end of the slideshow here. And we'd be glad to maybe make a couple of congregations back in Indiana, Illinois, Kentucky, wherever, and just share a little bit more with you. But if any that would like to join in with this effort, we talked to Tony before he left. He had to leave yesterday. And they're actually running a little bit of a deficit as far as. Tony takes care of most of this $2,600 of monthly support up there. And that's very helpful, but even his kitty is running a little low from the contributions he gets in to what goes out. Ours run low all the time. In fact, down at the very bottom of that, we just had to start making an Excel spreadsheet and listing the requests because we couldn't keep up with them. It was way more than we could help. We just tell them we can't help them with that. If we don't think it's a necessity, a need, we will say no. And it's kind of hard to say that, but if it's food, medical, maybe some utilities, kind of the essentials of our lives today, then we try to help as we can, but we have to make a list. So there are church requests of the building of Bibles, homeboats, and other mid-year evangelistic travel within the Philippines by the Philippine Brother. That's about $6,000 a year. And then the request for the balance of the request sheet carries a balance sometimes between $200 and $400. And we will approach congregations back in the West and say, we really need some help. Want to explain this one, but I did want to tell you about it. We have a fishing fund. It doesn't involve, a fishing pole. It doesn't involve a boat. What it is, our theory is, we could keep sending money for medical and for food for end of time, and it would still never be enough, or send a fish, or we can teach them to fish. So basically, this is a private contribution. This is not out of the church funds, and I want to clarify this so that no one misunderstood. Should they make a special contribution or want to contribute from their congregation on a monthly basis or whatever, that these are special situations. We kind of adopt certain ones that we feel have great promise, that have proven themselves a little bit. And these are funds used for the teaching, helping, and funding of education. Some of them have their degree, but they haven't taken their teaching exams. Or they're trade-related. We just send some funds over to buy some tools for Chris's Greenbeeson. He's a very good mechanic, but he doesn't have the tools. And so we're hoping he can support himself, perhaps employ other members of the church, and be able to build their local contributions up. So we do not have to continue to send as much year after year. So it's the personal development of their house, and I'll kind of clarify that. The houses aren't fancy, but they use them for daycare. They use them for church, home churches, their gardens, and anything that would give them food and better quality of life. So that is a separate thing. If you have had a brother approach me and they had an unexpected mental right bonus check, and he wanted to share that and put it towards some of these needs. So those are things that we look at. Well, that's the end of the presentation. It's a little longer. Tell me, have I lost
45 minutes?
Oh, goodness. I better sit down. There are emails if you want to contact us. We have a newsletter. If you're not getting it and you want to get it, send your email to us. And if you have additional questions or like a presentation, you got it.